Welcome to the Pindown, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And as always, I am joined by my stellar co-host, PvP's draft expert, Blake Silverman. Blake, you kind of got to do something fun last week, didn't you? Can you kind of break the news on what you got to attend?
I did, yeah. And first and foremost, shout out to Sean Corp, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, as well as Brody Hickel, who is the public relations coordinator for the Motor City Cruise. I was able to attend Cruise Media Day last week. So just the coach, general manager, a handful of the players talking, get all their photos taken before the start of the season, and took some time to speak to the media folks there to answer some questions. It was a cool experience. A lot of Pistons adjacent talk there. One thing I can say that I definitely learned is everyone in that building loves Isaiah Stewart. A few of the Cruise players were asked like who in the Pistons organization that they look up to or look to as like a leader, like vocal leader in the building. And Isaiah Stewart was mentioned every single time. I think we all knew that. I just thought it was interesting hearing it from a different perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to ask you, because I mean, obviously we're a Pistons podcast, but you know, we could talk about the Cruise a little bit. Was curious about the two-way guys. You know, did they get to speak? Did they have anything interesting to say? Any takeaways from their portions?
They did. So all of the two-way players, which is Malcolm Cazalone, Stanley Umade, and Jared Roden, spoke. And I mean, those guys have a hectic schedule. Like the schedule of any two-way player in the NBA is crazy. The night before, they were in New Orleans when the Pistons were there playing the Pelicans. The head coach, Jamel McMillan, mentioned that the Cruise were practicing before the Pistons had an optional team shoot around time. So just imagine like those guys are getting there early to be with the Cruise and spend time with the Pistons and just managing everything. I actually asked Stanley Umade about what it was like to earn that two-way contract, and he gave me a really cool answer. He said it happened after the last preseason game, which was in, I believe we played Dallas. And he, I'm not sure if he's from down there, but he went to high school down there at least. And I'm sure he spent some time growing up there. So he mentioned he had a bunch of his people there, his family there. And going into that last game, he knew we had an open two-way spot. He didn't know if he was going to get it. And then he said, like, after the game, Troy and Monty called him into the office and told him the news. And he said it was a really, like, real moment with them, which I thought was cool, a little, like, behind-the-scenes look to what that's like. And he seems thrilled to be a part of this organization. And we've got to see that play out on the court a bit for the Pistons as well.
Yeah, he had a couple of pretty solid games, especially going off to two games ago. Not as great against the Bucks, but still got some solid minutes. So one last thing on the Cruise. I'm sure the coaches and the coaching staff got to talk a little bit. What's the, the top-down sort of theme that you're getting from that coaching staff, likely from Monty Williams, right? I mean, the whole point of this Cruise organization is kind of acting as a feeder up to the Pistons, ideally, right? And at worst, just a place where they could stick injured players to recover. So what are some of the similarities that you noticed and just some of the things that the coaches had talked about in that vein?
Yeah, so the Cruise's head coach, Jamel McMillan, he's in his first year with the organization. He joined Monty's staff and also son of NBA head coach Nate McMillan. He came over to be an assistant for the Pistons, and this opportunity presented itself. DJ Baker, the old Cruise coach, took a job actually on Adrian Griffin's staff in Milwaukee. And what I've heard, I haven't watched a Cruise practice. I hope to soon, but I heard that his approach is very regimented, very professional, not like lackadaisical by any means. And this isn't the first time that Jamel has said this, but a theme of his has been setting the tone in the building, because they obviously share facilities with the Pistons. A lot of times they're practicing before the Pistons are. A lot of times that's early in the morning when guys are half asleep, just trying to get through things. But he really wants his team to set a tone, not just for them in their development and going into games, but for the whole building and organization. So when the Pistons step on the floor, the gym is already at a tone that they see fit. I thought that was something that's really cool and sort of just like speaks to the relationship and the dynamic between the two groups.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I didn't realize that they practice back to back like that. That's actually pretty cool. I guess it does let, you know, the Cruz guys stay over a little bit if they need some extra bodies, which they might right now with how injured they are. So it does make sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they always practice back to back, but oftentimes the vibe I've got that it's like that. And the one last thing I'll say is Buddy Boeheim was one of the guys who spoke to media, and he just in my like 5 to 10 minutes with him, he just seemed like the happiest dude like in the building. He mentioned how much he loves Detroit. He mentioned just like he loves cold weather, which kind of got a laugh from everyone. Like he said, he wears shorts through the winter. But he said growing up in Syracuse, Detroit is the perfect place for him. He loves all the restaurants around here. So he seems thrilled to still be around as well.
All right. The Pistons have played some games. Most recent one against the Milwaukee Bucks on Wednesday night. Tough loss, lost by 1 point. Honestly, they had the game in the third quarter and early in the fourth. They kind of exploded there after halftime after Giannis got ejected. But, you know, one of the biggest, well, the two biggest players in that game for the Pistons were Marcus Sasser and Cade Cunningham. Now, let's talk about Cade Cunningham because we haven't done too much on him yet so far through these first few episodes that we've done. So two main things for me that I wanted to bring up, the first being his drives and the second being the turnovers. So let's hit on the drives first. For the past three games, I thought he's really done a much better job going to the rim aggressively, even though this hasn't really led to foul calls. It seems like he's throwing his body around a little bit more. He's not getting bumped off his line as much. Have you seen, you know, the same thing? And just more generally, how do you think he's starting to like improve in that area? And what might he need to do more of on these drives as he hopes to improve even more?
Yeah, I think he's being aggressive, definitely more so than we saw in year one. I think I have personally noticed a few like 3-point attempts where I was like, maybe he should have drove that or just drove and kick or whatever it might be. I mean, I think after the first couple or few games of the season, we were like, this guy just needs to get some calls. Like, what can he do to get to the line more? He shot 10 free throws last night. So I think that is happening little by little. So I hope to continue to see just like more of an aggressive approach by him. I know we've all seen the screenshots of like Cade driving in the lane and then four defenders like crash in on him. I think in those scenarios, like once we have some of our more consistent and proven shooters back, he'll be more likely to kick those out rather than try and create for himself and just have that in his head no matter what. But I think we have seen some improvement from Cade driving the basketball.
Yeah. Well, so with the free throw thing specifically, you know, I almost wonder if he's like too good at avoiding contact a little bit. You know, too good for his own good, right? I mean, if you look at that, one of the last plays of the Bucks game, he drives down, he's on the right side of the hoop, Euro steps over to the left, clears almost the entire lane, and then kind of goes for a lefty hook, fading runner, whatever you want to call it, left-hand finish on the opposite side of the hoop. It gets blocked by Brook Lopez. But throughout that entire thing, he does not get touched, hardly, right? I mean, there's marginal contact while he's driving, but he's slipping and sliding through all these people, all these defenders. They're in the lane. He gets a clear launch angle on his jump. He doesn't even need to go into the body of Brook Lopez. Like, by all accounts, he was really good at getting away from everybody. It's just that he's not athletic enough to kind of go up over the top of Brook Lopez without going into his body and not have that shot be blocked. So is he, this is a weird question, but is he just too good at not getting fouled? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know if I want to say he's too good right now, but I think it's just his style of play and like the pace that he plays with, where he knows how to put defenders in positions that he wants them to be in. And sometimes that lends itself to drawing less contact or him fading away, getting or putting like a floater off the top of the backboard. So I really think it's just a product of his style of play. And hopefully if he continues to like put up the numbers he is and just prove himself as like a force driving to the basket, that those calls will come, because still I'm not sure if like 50-50 calls are going his way.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, to be fair, you know, he's not hunting contact, right? I mean, you compare how he played against the Bucks, and yes, he had 10 free throws, but if you look at that and compare it to what Damian Lillard did, and Damian Lillard is just absolutely hunting contact for the entirety of the final, about 6 minutes of that game. At one point, even saw Cade in front of him on the perimeter and just ran directly into him, like purposely, to get a foul call and get him closer to the bonus. Is this something that you think he might be able to develop as Cade matures a little bit through this season? Because to my memory, that's not something that Damian Lillard just walked into the league having a feel for. You know, he's always been pretty good at finishing around the rim and moving on, getting contact and all this, but he wasn't a free throw merchant, right? Kind of like he is now. So do you think that's something that can develop with him as we move forward?
I think so. I mean, thinking back, using Dame as an example, like, I mean, I don't think he did all he did to draw fouls like immediately when he came out the league. And this is like basically year two for Cade. And like we saw last night, like the Pistons were playing drop. Jalen Duren was back there and Dame just pretty much ran towards him, and Duren didn't have anything to do other than like put his hands up and foul him really to stop him from getting a bucket. So I think as the Pistons are working towards like figuring out those defensive coverages and seeing that, I think Cade can maybe take it upon himself to hopefully figure it out more, and hopefully leading to himself getting to the line a bit more. I don't remember if the Pistons shot many free throws in the fourth quarter. I mean, I can safely say without looking it up that the Bucks like shot a ton more free throws than them in the fourth quarter. So hopefully that's something that he just has in the back of his mind as we get into clutch time.
Agreed. All right. So let's get to the turnovers, which a lot of people want to talk about. But before we do, I've got some context that I wanted to throw at you before we really dive into it. His rookie year and the 10 or 12 games, whatever it was that he played last season, he averaged about just over three turnovers a night. That's obviously not good, but it's not the world-ending horrible level that we've seen so far this year. So far this season, he's averaged over five turnovers a night. So my question, Blake, what have you made of these turnover struggles so far? And is this something that he can fix? Or is this really just kind of what he is right now and potentially all season?
So I think, and last night, I don't know if he had a single turnover in the first half. Like, he ended the game with five turnovers, so still up around like about where he has been this whole season. And I think Cade, like when you look around the league, he's towards the top in usage, and those high usage guys are always going to have a more turnovers than someone else that doesn't have the ball in their hands too much. So I think it might be something that we continue to see with Cade. I have noticed some like poor decision making and almost like sloppy turnovers at times. So like that's what I'm really looking for Cade to cut down. Like personally, I'm thinking that he's always going to turn the ball over at least like a few times a night. But with him, I really am just hoping that we can limit those like lackadaisical errant passes that go into multiple arms of the defense. And there's really like no chance of getting them through, or like just careless things. Or when we notice he's getting gas, like finding a way to limit turnovers in those situations. What do you think?
Well, so we talked about the lazy turnovers last week a little bit too, right? I mean, he'll make these, I don't want to call them boneheaded, but kind of what did you see there? How did you miss that rotation sort of passes? But the thing is, he did that as a rookie too. So to me, I'm trying really hard to weigh out which of these two things is kind of the root cause here, right? As a rookie, he had a lot of those turnovers, but he still only averaged about 3 turnovers a night. And 3 is a lot more reasonable of a number than he's at right now with 5. So is that a product of increased usage, or is this a product of just rust that we've seen, you know, that he's undoubtedly working through a little bit of rust, even from game 1 and 2 to like where he was against the Bucks. I think he looks noticeably different. So he's clearly still shaking off some things, still growing back into maybe even where he was, maybe where, you know, where he's going to end up being, however you want to put it. He seems a little bit rusty. So what I'm trying to figure out is how many of the extra 2 turnovers a night can we account to that, if that makes sense? Because if it's really just an increase of usage, then maybe we got to dial things back for him. And maybe we should anyway, because maybe he's showing that he's not ready to be, you know, the next Luka Doncic right now, which is fair. You know, no one really is Luka Doncic. But yeah, I'm just not sure which it is right now. And to be fair, it's only 9 games, right? You know, we're probably not going to know for sure until game 20, 25, something closer to that. But I don't know. Do you think this is just rust, or am I kind of giving too many excuses?
I really do think it's him just being like the focal point of the offense and that like increased usage. I mean, there have been games where he's gotten up to like 7-8 turnovers a game, and like that can't happen. Like we have to find a way to limit that. But I don't know. He's clearly like, he basically missed an entire year of basketball. Like, we knew he was going to come back and look a bit shaky in some scenarios. And like what that's been so far is the turnovers. I'm hoping once the team gets healthier, some guys come back and he has some of that like spacing that everyone's talking about around him, that we can find a way to cut that turnover number like back to that around the 3-3.5 range. Like you mentioned, he was in his rookie year. I really do just think he's being asked to do a lot right now, and coming back from a year off of basketball, like we're going to have those like increased turnovers. It has to be limited down. But I don't think it's like, not all his turnovers are those careless ones, which are the ones that in my mind, we really need to focus on.
Oh yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I mean, I could excuse all of the turnovers, or almost all of the turnovers, to the moon and back right now. I mean, he's coming off a year where he didn't play basketball, so he's coming off an injury, significant surgery, all this stuff. So he's going to be rusty. He's still a really young guard. Young guards turn the ball over a lot. His usage rate is up near the top of the league. So you've not only got a young guard who's rusty, but you're also kind of running a heliocentric offense around him. And on top of that, there's almost no shooting, or at least shooting that the defenses around him, or that he's playing against, respect. So like, I can excuse it all the way to the moon and back. I don't know if it's smart to do that, but I can. That doesn't mean it's right. So our guy Bryce Simon here, he brings up, he looked this up from Basketball Reference. The usage percentage for Cade Cunningham is up 6% from his rookie year. The turnover percentage is up 1.4%. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure what to make about that. Both of those numbers kind of track, I guess, with what I'm seeing. Do you have any instant thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, and first shout out to Bryce. Thank you for the support. I know everyone's probably already checking out what Bryce is doing, but if you're not, please do at Motor City Hoops and the Pistons Pulse. But looking at that, like, those don't seem like drastic increases. And like, I think a big issue is in the Pistons starting group. And a lot of times when he's on the floor, like, Cade is the best shooter out there, which is not great to say the least. Like, he needs that spacer in the corner, like, that he can kick out to when he noticed the defense crashing down. So I really hope that once the team gets healthier, we can see that number whittle down and hopefully compare his turnover rates in that period to the first like 9, maybe 10 or so games of the season.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. And honestly, that's kind of where I'm at with most of this roster right now. It's a wait and see. We are still 9 games in. They've had a lot of injuries. You know, there's more that we don't know about the Pistons right now than that we do know, unfortunately, which wasn't really our expectation coming into the year. But we did get blindsided by these injuries. Regardless, let's hop on in to some questions here. So first one from Beef Stew 4321 from the DBB chat. He's asking, what do you think has been the main reason for these defensive struggles in recent games?
So recently, I mean, it's not a good answer, but I think a lot of it has been health. Like, we're playing shortened rotations. A lot of these guys are tired. And I mean, I don't think we've seen super strong, like, defensive play from like Jalen Duren either, like we've seen in the first few games. So I think that's causing a little bit of it too. And I know Duren has missed some time, and we had Bagley starting in there for him, and we know that Bagley isn't anywhere close to the defensive player that he is. So of course you're going to see the defense take a step back. That said, like, I can't say enough good things about Asar Thompson. Like, he's our best defender by a mile, really. And I mean, Stu has played pretty good defensively as well. I just think around them, like, when you have Bagley in the starting lineup, Duren having some trouble with some of the coverages or like drivers that opponents have thrown at him and he had to deal with, there's going to be some struggles at, like, I don't think Killian has been a standout defensively. I think he's played decently on that end of the floor, but I don't think he's like the great defender that you're putting next to Asar to hopefully take some of that pressure off of Cade Cunningham. So I think it's a mixture of that. And hopefully, like, once the team gets healthier and we have some guys that we can sub in and not worry about foul trouble as much and things along those lines, hopefully it'll be like a more complete team defensively.
Yeah. So when I was looking at this question, trying to think of like the one main reason, right? Because there are a lot of reasons that the defense has struggled over the past few games. I think you're right. I think the biggest one is Jalen Duren has regressed from the first few games that we've watched from this season. I mean, go back all the way to game one, right, in Miami. He was on top of his weak side rotations. He was communicating heavily. He looked great. It really looked like he turned a corner. Now, not as much, right? He's not doing that as much. I don't know how much of that can be explained by his ankle injury. You know, he does look a little bit hobbled. You could noticeably see it 2 games ago. I can't remember who they played, but a few games ago, you could see him from the tip kind of limping up and down the court when he was trying to run. So maybe he's just not as quick off of his feet right now. If that's the case, honestly, they probably need to just give him some time to heal up. I know the roster's slim, but you do have Marvin Bagley and you do have Isaiah Stewart. You know, you can make do without Duren as a center until he gets healthy. So, you know, if it is the ankle, that's something that they got to look at. But, you know, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in a few seconds. I think the next question is about the coverage against Dame, right, against the Bucks. But if you look at that, that's a great example of some of these what I have thought to been questionable ball screen coverages. They've been dropping Jalen Duren pretty deep against guards, just as a blanket scheme, I guess I would say recently. I don't remember them doing that as much early in the season. This seems to be something that's changed. I could be wrong on that. You know, I haven't been able to go back and look as much as I wanted, but I don't remember them doing this a lot early. It seems like they're doing a lot of it now. So you look at Damian Lillard there in the fourth quarter, they're setting screens for him almost 40 feet away from the hoop, and Jalen Duren's camped out at the elbow, right? Just giving him a full-on runway or plenty of space for a pull-up jump shot. If it's me, like you really can't be doing that. You need to be either up on him with a hard hedge or at least try to ice the screen, play it flat, like something to slow these guys down. And I think we did see it a little bit too with like Steph against the Warriors. They were playing more of a relaxed ball screen coverage. So, you know, I think the main issue here is Jalen Duren. I think Jalen Duren either needs to get healthy or needs to step his focus back up to be where it was early in the season, that dominant interior presence on the weak side. He was great. He needs to get back to that. But secondarily, I do think they need to be a little bit more aggressive in some of these defensive coverages, especially when you're playing stars, bona fide stars like Damian Lillard.
Yep. And it got to the point in the fourth quarter last night where there was nothing really our defense can do other than foul Dame. And of course you don't want to be in those scenarios. Like you have to check Dame from like places on the court. You don't have to check many other guards in the NBA, and that will affect the rest of your defense. Like Duren has to play up a little bit. So I think that hurt him as well. And I mean, like I've been saying, really the only thing he could do is foul. I hope that Asar Thompson gets to a point, and it's probably not going to be this year, where he is like taking charges and he's going to get those calls like a decent amount of time. Like the best defensive plays in my eyes are when you force an offensive foul or you force a shot clock violation. And we weren't really like in any scenarios where we can do it. I understand not trying to go for like a bang bang play, take a charge that could go as a block. So I do think you need to adjust a bit of the defense in the post. Like hopefully Duren has an easier time when we're not seeing Dame Lillard on the other side of the floor. But hopefully some of the guys around him can step up and provide some good defense around the perimeter as well.
So since I ruined it, let's just hop to that question already. Our guy Bryce, again, he asks, should the Pistons have changed the defensive coverage against Damian Lillard in the fourth? And I'm going to add, because the answer we just talked about is yes, what would you have rather seen them do?
Yeah, so I can't remember. Was Asar still checking Dame for most of the fourth?
It seemed to rotate. They were also letting them switch ball and off ball screens a little bit. So Dave was, for the most part, at least to my memory, he was picking his on ball matchup, and then they were setting him a really high ball screen, and you're playing a deep drop coverage, giving him a lot of runway to do whatever he wants with. And he ended up just becoming a foul merchant and shooting a incredible amount of free throws in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, maybe it is as simple as like what we've been saying, just like not playing in drop when you're going up against a guy like that that has like unlimited range. Like that causes you to go up a bit and not really have like as much effectiveness in drop. And then when it got to the point where Duren was the guy that was supposed to take the assignment, all he could do was follow him. And we don't want to be in those scenarios. I think he got up to like four or five fouls. So getting in that danger zone, like, I think it might just be as simple as not playing the drop in those situations. That's probably not a very like X's and O's savvy answer, but I think that's at least like a quick thing that could be done.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're going to play a drop on Dame, you can't be that deep. So if you imagine, you know, Jalen Duren switching out onto Damian Lillard in a one-on-one type situation, he's obviously at a disadvantage, right? Damian Lillard is a lot quicker. He's a lot more shifty with his dribble, and he can get moving in ways that a guy as big as Jalen Duren can't. So it's obviously a pretty big disadvantage for Duren. Now, when you have multiple feet of space to let Damian Lillard set up Jalen Duren however he wants, right? When you've got that ball screen so high up and you have Duren so far down onto the elbow, not only is he at a disadvantage, it's almost impossible as a big to do anything with that. That's why he fouled so much, because you're watching Damian Lillard, one of the best point guards in the NBA, come towards you, right? He could pull up for three. He could pull up from the mid-range. He could get me off balance and step back and hit a jump shot. He could go all the way to the hoop. He could try to, you know, get me to foul him. He can do anything that he wants, and it's basically a minor fast break, right? So you're at an incredible disadvantage. And on top of this, that we know he's dealing with an ankle injury, so he's not as quick as he wants to be. It really did not make any sense to me what they were doing. So, yes, I think they needed to change it. What I personally would have liked to see, a lot of those screens, to my memory, were high ball screens, but not at the top of the key. These are mostly set pretty high up over on the wing. I would have liked to see them ice these. Most of the screens seem to be going to the middle of the court. So if you could ice it and push him to the sideline and have Jalen Duren just kind of sitting at the three-point line, right? So it's effectively still a drop, but the task of Jalen Duren in that sort of situation is just to stunt at Damian Lillard long enough for the on-ball defender to get back around in front. And now you're back to like the screen never happened, right? So if everything works out, that's ideally how it would go. So I would have liked to see it played out that way. I think you would have stopped a lot of drives to the hoop if they had gone that route. Bryce brings up something interesting here, you know, maybe having Stu and Duren switch so that Isaiah Stewart's the ball screen coverage guy. And Stewart's really long and he's pretty quick, right? So an advantage here, maybe you could actually have him hard hedging out on these ball screens. So as the guard, you're forcing Damian Lillard to go over the top. And then you got the big man sliding out, pushing him almost all the way back out to half court as you recover back underneath. That could have worked. That would have been great. Anything would have been better than what they did is kind of the point here. And that's unfortunate for me because they let it go for 5 minutes, Blake. They let that happen for 5 minutes. Why didn't they change it?
Yeah. It's like, that was just such, even though you're not healthy, it's still your ninth game of the year. Like, that was just such a tough loss for me. And I mean, the defensive end, like, yeah, we could have made changes like we were talking about, but also offensively, like, we didn't have an answer for the buck zone that they were running. When we did get good looks and guys were making the right passes, the shots just weren't falling. I don't remember how many minutes we went without an actual field goal. So hopefully we can get to the point where we're able to hold those leads. We can find a way to make something work on the offensive end, because it was clear last night that adjustments need to be made on both sides of the floor.
So with the zone offense thing, I want to real quick get your thoughts on this, because I don't understand the insistence of ball screens on an even front zone. So the Bucks were running an extended 2-3 zone, which is the same coverage that Miami tried. It was the same coverage that, forget which team tried against the Pistons, but extending the wings on a 2-3 zone and bringing the guards up higher above the three-point line seems to stall everything out for Detroit. And just get the ball to the middle. Like, why are you trying to ball screen when you already have a help defender all the way to the already in the middle of the court because it's an even front zone. It's a 2-3. Like, just post up Dern, or even better, put Cade or Killian at the free throw line, get them the ball, have them turn and face the rim, and now you're playing 4-on-3. Like, why? I don't get why it's so hard. These are NBA guys. And this is a problem with Dwayne Casey's Pistons iterations as well over the years. Like, are you seeing something I'm not? Why haven't they been able to figure this out?
I am not sure either. Like, it just seems that when, I don't know if it's when an adjustment is made, like, we just can't figure it out, and Monty is letting the guys try and figure it out. I mean, I'd like to think that we're doing whatever we can to win the game, of course, in that situation. But being that we didn't really make a specific adjustment or, I don't know, just do anything to get into that zone. Like, it's weird, like you're saying, it went too long without doing something. And it was so clear that we were cold, like, this defense, what we were doing wasn't going to penetrate it. So we had to do something. A change wasn't made. And I mean, I hope, again, like I keep saying, when this team gets healthy, we will have more answers for that. Like, we did have two rookies on the floor that were both playing well, one in particularly, but it might just also be a product of those guys not being in those scenarios very often, trying to run their offense, the offense isn't working out, and then it's like, what do I do? And they don't know yet. They're trying to figure it out. So hopefully when we're healthier, it'll be easier to make those adjustments. But right now, it just seems like simple things like those coverages that we know we can't figure out aren't, that like, it just stops our offense, which kind of, I don't know what to think about it either.
So you brought up something that I had honestly forgotten about from my own experience when I was playing, but you're right. Now, what I'm about to say won't explain the entire 5 minutes of it all, but it might at least explain the first 2, 3, 4 possessions, right? When you're playing basketball, most times it's on the players on the court to identify the zone, specifically the guards, because the guards are the guys bringing the ball up. You've got, it's not quite a top-down view, but you can see everything out in front of you. So maybe this is an issue with the guards that were out on the court. I think at the time it was Cade and Sasser, just not picking up quick enough that this is a 2-3 zone extended being played against us. We need to shift the offense. I'll have to go back and look to see if that tracks with what actually happened, but that could definitely be part of the problem, at least at the start, for why they've struggled against these types of zones, just not identifying it quick enough as the guards out on the floor. And before anyone says, hey, like, well, the coach should tell them, this is a really young team. You need the young guys to pick up on this faster. They're not going to learn it if every time a zone pops up, Monty Williams is out there yelling 2-3, 2-3. Like, they need to learn this. They need to pick it up if they haven't already. So you bring up a really good point there with being able to identify it.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, I think that's a big thing when those coverages are first happening, those first handful of impressions, or excuse me, possessions. But hopefully, like, it was going on for 5 minutes. Like, it got to the point where all of Pistons Twitter noticed it. And we were like, what are we doing? What are we going to do to, like, get through on this? So hopefully, as some of the younger guys are, like, working through these things, there can also be a point where we, like, our coaching staff notices, like, hey, we need to take a timeout, talk things over, make an adjustment, and hopefully that will put those guys in the best situation to know what they need to do to just get a bucket and stop these runs and maybe make the opposition think about doing something different as well.
All right. Next question. I want to hit this one quickly. So Johnny 77 asked, will Jaden Ivey play Friday against the Sixers? The answer, unfortunately, is no. You will not see Jaden Ivey out there against the 76ers for the first in-season tournament game for the Pistons. He's still dealing with a unnamed illness. This was reported in a long laundry list of injuries that the Pistons have by our guy Omari Sankofa II. So, you're not going to see Jaden Ivey. It's unfortunate. And, you know, hopefully he gets feeling better pretty soon here. They need bodies. But let's get into talking about another guard. This is Dave from the DBB comments. He's asking the question that everybody wants to know, but no one can answer. Is the Killisance for real? That being, is Killian Hayes going to continue playing very good basketball from now on?
First of all, I mean, I just love the phrase Killisance. I hope that sticks. He last night he played decent. He had a solid game and then was like our best player on the floor the game before offensively. I want to see that add up consistently, like string together a few games like that. Last night in Milwaukee, like he wasn't able to find it from deep. So like, I think that's when he really unlocks his game and he can hopefully make a few shots and then drive and work in the mid range. Like we've seen he's been able to do in the past. I know like he's still been stuck in the, just category of being in the starting lineup for defensive purposes. I mean, he hasn't like wowed me by any means on that end. Like he's clearly a better defender than like Jaden Ivey. But it, like there comes a point, and this has been a big talking point, where does what he brings defensively outweigh like what he does offensively and some of like the lulls he can find himself in where he just like can't find a bucket on some nights. So for the Killisance to stick, like I would really just want him to see him string together a few strong like scoring performances. So hopefully like as a whole, we can all agree that he's bringing something positive on the offensive end of the floor and not just in there for defensive purposes. So it's just like a consistency thing with Killian for me.
I agree. I think it's definitely a consistency thing. And I've been saying all year, and I'm going to stand by it, that the version of Killian Hayes we've been watching this season is no different than the one we got last year, right? Last season, he even had about a month. It was around this time of year. He had a month of really good basketball. We all thought, hey, maybe he's turning the corner. I believe he eventually got injured, or perhaps it was the suspension after that Magic game. He missed some time. Came back, wasn't necessarily the same guy. And now here we are again, right? He plays a great game a couple of nights ago. Definitely the best player on the court for the Pistons. It wasn't a question. That was, might have been the best game of basketball that he's played in his career, at least from my perspective, because not only was he scoring the ball well, passing the ball well, rebounding well, he was also not getting blown by a ton on defense, which has actually been an issue for him this season. He's been pretty good rotationally. He's been a playmaker off the ball, but in terms of just one-on-one coverage, he has been getting beat quite a bit. So he's not a total positive on defense as a guard. He's just kind of the best option that they have. So all of that being said, you look at what he did against the Bucks. He had 14 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. That all sound really good. He was 6 of 15 from the floor, 0 of 3 from 3, and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. So I did think that he played pretty solid on the defensive end. But all of these same offensive issues that we've known to be a problem with Killian Hayes, outside of the occasional, you know, explosion, right, that he can have and he's shown that he can do, all of those same problems, they're still here. You know, he's still not really getting to the rim. He had probably his best half-court drive against the Bucks. He ended up taking a guy off the dribble down to the right, finished with a really nice inside hand finish. Now, obviously, he's a lefty, so that's kind of what he wanted to do anyway. But it looked good. He got all the way to the rim. It was solid. Might have been his best drive of the season, in my opinion. My point is, I really need to see something out of Killian Hayes that is different for me to say that the Killisance is even happening. Like, I won't even go as far to say that it's real. Like, I want to know that it's actually happening first. And what it is exactly what you said. It's consistency. If Killian Hayes, it doesn't have to be the Golden State game every night, but it has to be shooting over 42% from the floor every night for over a month. And, you know, none of the defensive side goes away. None of the rebounds drop down. None of the assists drop down. It's, you know, continuing to not turn the ball over like he's been doing. It's basically just putting all of these things that he's flashed that he can do before individually and kind of putting it together in a game and then stacking a bunch of those games. And that's what I need to see before I'm talking about Killian Hayes as a Killisance. You know, he's back. He's improved. He's really turned a corner. Like, it's tough for me because I really liked him in that draft and I still really like him and I really want him to figure it out. He hasn't yet. You know, he has nights like the one against Golden State where you think maybe he's turned that corner, and then he follows it up with what he did against the Bucks, which was shooting 30% from the floor again. 33, sorry. You know, we got to be specific. Not good. Point is, not good. So I don't know what to make of him so far this season. I just, like you said, consistency. Turn the corner and stay there. Just stay there. That's what I want out of it.
Yeah. And I mean, if we, not to like relate him to Marcus Sasser, but like what Sasser was doing offensively last night, like you would want to see something like that from Killian every now and then, to the point where like you can't take him off the floor. Like we haven't seen many, if any, of those performances. And I mean, Sasser, even with his size, is a good defender. Like, will he have trouble guarding some NBA players? Yes, but he still is like active on that side of the floor. He's gonna make some great defensive plays every now and then, and like we've seen in these nine games, he can pop off at any point. And when you have like Killian Hayes on the floor in the fourth quarter, like, it's almost like I wonder if you're taking an opportunity like that away, which hopefully he can be that player at some point. I just don't think he has been so far.
Yeah, I agree. So hopefully he can figure it out. You know, it would be really, really good for this Pistons team if he could figure it out and start doing these things consistently, you know? So Prove it. You know, I want to see it. I want to see it from him. So hopefully he can do it. All right. On to our next question here from our guy Rogue Blue. He asks, if the Jaden Ivey situation does not change up before the NBA trade deadline, would you trade Jaden Ivey and Bojan Bogdanovic for Keldon Johnson of the Spurs?
I mean, I've seen a few Keldon Johnson to the Pistons mock trades in the past, and like, I would love to bring a guy like that. I don't know if he's available, honestly. And I mean, for this specific idea, I would have to see how, I'm assuming the money works, but I'm just not sure. But I think a move like this is very risky for the Pistons. And it's not because of like getting a guy like Keldon Johnson. Like, right now, I think Ivy is your trade chip that you may be willing to give up if you really don't think that he fits with what this team is trying to do long term. Bojan, like, yes, he would contribute to any contending team. Like, anyone would love to get him at the deadline. I don't know how much value specifically he has, but a young player like Ivy that has a super high ceiling, like, that will bring you back something really good, most likely. Like, I think that's the one piece the Pistons have to potentially make a splash in the trade market. Would it be giving up on Jaden Ivey too soon? Probably. Yeah, but if we really think that there's some other player out there that will tie this whole team together and like unlock the potential, I think Ivy is your one trade chip that can give you something valuable that it seems that this organization might be willing to part with. I might be wrong on that, but it just seems like that's the way it's going.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I mean, of the players that would be great to add to this, you know, team in this rotation, like Keldon Johnson's probably near the top of the list. I'm not sure that he's available at all. I'm pretty certain that he's kind of taken a mentor role or an enforcer type role next to Wemby. And I mean, if you just drafted Wembanyama, would you want to get rid of his mentor type, you know, arm around the shoulder guy? Like, I probably wouldn't. So I'm not sure he's even available. But in terms of the talent getting back, Keldon Johnson is probably just about the sweet spot that you could probably get back for a Jaden Ivey, just because Keldon Johnson is younger, but he is more proven. There's still room to grow, you know, fits a role, all that kind of stuff. But with Jaden Ivey specifically, you know, Bryce said this on the Pistons Pulse, and I really agree with it. It's kind of a question that you and I could never know. This comes down to what Monty Williams thinks about Jaden Ivey. If this really is a situation where, you know, hey, tough love, you're going to prove it to me, you're going to improve on defense, and not only do I believe that you will, but once you do, you're a foundational piece here, you know, we need you, all that kind of thing, then great. Like, keep Jaden Ivey. Please keep Jaden Ivey. You need him. If it's a situation like at all similar to DeAndre Ayton, where for whatever reason Monty just does not think this is going to work, then this is kind of an asset problem, right? It's not a problem of, you know, well, would we be giving up onto him? Giving up on Jaden Ivey too soon? Would we maybe get enough back? Like, at that point, if Monty just doesn't think it's going to work, this is the most you're going to be able to get for Jaden Ivey right now. Because the more he doesn't play, the less people are going to be interested. So if it's the second one, then shoot, maybe you don't even wait to the deadline. Maybe you're looking for it now, right? Maybe you're trying to find a home now for Jaden Ivey. I'm not sure what the answer to that is. I would rather not move on from Ivy, just to be clear. Like, I think he's got an incredible potential. I think he's a great fit next to Cade. But if it turns out to be the second thing, then, you know, I think you're looking at the class of older young player like Keldon Johnson, honestly, kind of like a Colin Sexton, like someone in this range of player that you might be able to get back that's already on their second contract. And you may want to do it sooner rather than later. Hopefully that's not where this is going.
Yeah. And like you said, and like Bryce said, we don't know if what the situation really is with Ivy. We don't know if he's available. I just think if he is on the market and we're seriously considering trading him, you need to get as much back as you possibly can. Because I think that is the one thing that you can possibly put out there on the market that's going to get you back something real that can help this team. If I was Troy Weaver, I would be very afraid to trade Ivy, just because like it might be that last, or not last move, but the one like big thing that you can do and you can offer out there to get a player or players with extremely high value back.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, like we both said, like Jaden Ivey could really work out, right? He could still end up being a really, really good player. If I have my way, he's going to do that in Detroit. So hopefully all of this is just speculation and, you know, Monty Williams has given him the tough love approach, and it's all going to work out here in the end. So we've got to just about wrap it up. I want to get one quick hitter in for you because we got asked this question, and I knew it was right up your alley. Buzzard Beater from the DBB chat, he wants to know, Blake, is Asar Thompson a future 20 points per game guy?
This is a tough one. I am going to say it's possible. I don't know how quickly it's possible. He was like, I don't want to use overtime elite as like a comparison to what he can do in the NBA, because we know the discussions about this, the competition level and everything, but he was like the MVP in that league, like both years he played, and like beside his brother as well. So, and that comes with some scoring power. He has a lot to figure out if he's ever going to get to that point. I think he could be a 20 point per game guy. And if he's going to be like our true second or even third option, like maybe he can get somewhere in that 12 to 15 range, like fairly soon. And you never know how his offense can unlock. The shot has to improve for this to ever be possible. So I think this is possible. I just am not confident in that answer. What do you think?
I'm going to shock you, Blake. If you had asked me this before the season starts, I'd say no way, no chance, won't ever happen. That's just not the type of player he is. Now, if he keeps doing as a scorer what he's been doing, you know, almost exclusively off transition and off cuts, if he keeps doing this, you know, he's averaging almost 12 a night, and we see this extend, you know, past a quarter of the way into the season, I don't even think he necessarily needs to be a good shooter for him to get to 20 points a night. I think he'll just need to tidy up his ball handling. It's really loose right now. But if you can imagine a guy with his athleticism, if he can tighten up his handle, you know, he can get to the rim at will in transition. He can get to the rim off any cut. Now you add some ball screens or some dribble handoffs or just straight ISOs. Like, yeah, he might not even need to shoot. He's a heck of a lot closer as a scorer than I ever would have guessed, even after summer league. So he's proven me wrong, and I hope he keeps it up because it's been fun. It's been really fun to watch.
That's a good point. And I mean, that like reverse dunk he had just like standing there was just like, it's just crazy.
No, load up.
Yeah, it's crazy what this guy can do. I mean, the shot has to improve, but like you said, he can score in different ways. Like, I think there are going to be nights like what we saw last night where it's tough for him to score, but I don't know. The sky's the limit with this kid right now. And like, if he can bring that much scoring power alongside everything else he does, like, I mean, the Pistons got one of the best prizes of this draft class. Maybe two.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, they did. So I know you got to go. I know we got to close this out. Wanted to get the Asar Thompson in there, though. I know how high you were on him during the draft, yeah. And I was not. So I like highlighting it.
That's my guy.
And on a happy note, right?
Yeah.
On a happy note. That's good.
Yeah, so we should. I mean, if he's still playing this way, we should always end it on Asar Thompson, because the things he's doing are incredible. But yeah, thank you everyone for joining. Special thank you to Sean Corp, the managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. And shout out to everyone who joined here on YouTube or listening to us beginning tomorrow morning, wherever you get your podcasts, and providing us with all your questions and talking points throughout the week. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us here on YouTube. And we can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you all.